Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's a Food Friday, and as always, we have a treat in store for you. We have an expert in the studio to help you with just about any kitchen quandary. Hallie Bay Ramdeen is the food editor at thekitchen.com. She has a degree in gastronomy, the study of food and culture, from Boston University. Previously, she worked as an associate food editor at Better Homes and Gardens. Give us a call right now with your question. Maybe you can stump Hallie. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. Let's see what else. Facebook, sure. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Hallie Bay Ramdeen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So excited to have you here, and you're a regular WAMC listener, too.
I am, yep.
And it's your first time here in the studio?
First time. It's like my public radio Disneyland right now.
Really? So you're not underwhelmed? Because most of the time people just say, oh, this is it? Oh, I can't believe it.
It's comforting. I like it.
Well, this is good. I'm glad. See, you're already comfortable. So I love the website, thekitchen.com. And first of all, if you go to it, you got to leave the E out.
You got to leave the E out.
Right. It's thekitchen.com. Mm-hmm. And it's a great website. You have recipes and advice, and you can learn about drinks, which is really what I clicked on first, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And you do a great column. Well, I don't know if it's not a column, but it's a section of the site. So it's questions and answers, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So looking at the site today, it runs the gamut. Tips for first-time apple pie bakers to I have fish bones in my throat, now what?
Yes.
And you just answer them.
Yeah, I do. We have multiple channels in which readers can reach out to us, and sometimes they shoot us an email, and sometimes it's a question on Twitter. But I kind of pick out the ones that I feel are going to be most beneficial and just dig in.
It's really, it's a fun site. And even for those who are not avid cooks or foodies, if you will, it's a fun place to be.
Yeah, it's resourceful, and also we have some really just interesting like newsy bits that people can, you know, just spend a lot of time on the website. You can get lost on that site.
Now, believe it or not, I don't think I've ever baked a cake, but I did read about 7 pointers for making your first cake.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm still not going to do it.
We want to get you wherever you are. So if you're a professional, you can use the site. If you're a novice, you can use the site.
Our guest today is Hallie Bay Ramdeen, and the number to call is 800-348-2551. Looking at your bio, it says you're a lapsed art historian.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, pretty quickly realized that it was going to be tough to make a career out of art history. So
it could have been worse. Could have been a philosopher.
Yeah. But, you know, I didn't let it go because I've always been interested in the visual element of things. So I quickly transitioned from art history into food styling and food photography. And that was kind of my gateway into food in general. And then now here I am, food editor.
You know, having chefs on this program, presentation and appearance play such an important role.
Absolutely.
So you were a food photographer?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like right now when you're in food, and I'm sure most people who really love their Instagram are aware of it, you want to take pictures of what you're eating, but you also want it to look beautiful. And so I was really interested in my food looking beautiful.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have any questions, like tips for first-time apple pie baking, or maybe you have a fish bone caught in your throat and you just want to call, well, if you can speak, sure, why not? Let's go to the phones now and see what we have. Jan in Hanover. Jan, you're on.
Hi, I'd like to know what the secret is to making madeleines.
Oh, that's a good question. And it's good because Bastille Day is kind of coming up pretty soon. Well, I think the first thing that you should know is that the batter for making madeleines, it's far closer to a batter for like a bread than it is for a cookie. It's thick. And so I think most people are whipping it up and they're expecting it to be kind of loose. But this is a thick dough. And you really do need the special pan. So madeleine is not a madeleine without a madeleine pan. And grease those pans. You need to make sure that the cookie is going to slip out pretty easily after.
Mm. Jan, you want to follow up? I think we lost Jan. Jan, are you still there?
Yeah, are you greasing them with butter?
Yeah, you can use butter. You can use like a release spray that they have for baking, very specifically for baking. But either will work. Okay. I will tell you butter will taste the best.
I would think so. And then it's clarified butter, isn't it, that you have to use?
Yeah, clarified butter won't burn because you've removed all of the milk proteins. So you'll get like that nice buttery flavor, but you won't have to worry about it browning or burning in the oven.
Okay, and that's because you poured off the top part? I think I fail in the clarifying the buttered piece.
You know, clarifying butter, you just have to be patient. So it's a low flame, and you're cooking the butter, and you're waiting for the milk solids to rise to the top, and you're skimming them off. And then, you know, the secret there is to put it through a fine mesh strainer or even cheesecloth. Yeah, so you get all of it. But really, you just got to be patient. You got to wait for it.
Okay, thank you. I think that's what I've not done, and I totally appreciate this.
Oh,
thank
great.
You.
Thanks, Jan. We appreciate the call. All right. Hallie's one for one. Well done. Good job. I'm keeping score now.
Okay.
Because, you know, when you answer these questions on the website at thekitchen.com without the E, you need to research them sometimes.
I sure do.
So you have no research here.
Nope.
You have no phone.
Off the dome.
Your phone has no battery left. So we'll just see how you do. Let's go to line two. And Joanne in Queensbury, you're on. Joanne. Nor not. Hello? Did we lose Joanne? Boy, I'm not doing too good today. Well, Joanne, I apologize. You could try it again. I don't know. 800-348-2551. She wanted to know how not to scorch popcorn.
Well, I'm just really happy that she's making popcorn on the stove because it really is
kind of the best. Hang on. Don't mind me. All right.
I would say some of the major takeaways would be to make sure you're using the right oil there. I'm a huge fan of olive oil or coconut oil. You want to start with a low flame and get that oil hot before you even add your first kernel. And then you start with one kernel. You add one kernel to the pot.
What?
Yeah. And this is how you wait to make sure that the oil is at the perfect temperature. You wait for that one kernel to pop. The second it pops, you add the rest of the...
Carefully.
You'll get
oil all over yourself.
Oh, no, you can do this, though.
Yeah?
I trust people. Like, they can handle this part.
All right.
You slowly and carefully add the rest of the kernels, and then you cover it. Keep that pot moving. You give it a little shake every now and then, and just let it go.
Isn't it easier just to use the microwave bags?
I don't know. You don't get the same flavor.
Are you sure? Are you being elitist?
No, not at all. I am a fan of the microwave. It can do a lot of things, but I think stovetop popcorn... it's just leagues ahead of microwave popcorn.
Okay, I don't think I've ever done that. I'm afraid of setting a fire with the hot oil.
You can do this.
Okay. No, you don't know me very well. You'll know by the end of the show that the answer is I can't do this.
All right. There's a lot of good microwave popcorn then.
You can keep eating. I'll give you two for two on that one. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. One of the things I like about thekitchen.com is the drink section.
Yes.
And so you're all about the iced frothy drinks now,
well,
eh?
I'm thinking about summer, right? I'm thinking about like the warmer weather, and so right now blender cocktails are on the top of my mind.
Okay, I can't do that. I had a bad experience in Jacksonville, Florida with them.
That's where you would have a bad experience.
Well, they were delicious. and it was very hot. There was like a pier there, and it was a hot summer day.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of hurricanes.
Ooh. And the second
one made my stomach like ice, like it hurt.
Huh.
You know what I mean? That got frozen?
Yeah, yeah.
So never again.
You just gotta, I think they're sippers, right? They're not meant to be thrown back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
PSA.
Now. All right, that's minus one for Ray to plus two for Hallie. So you were talking about a frothy Negroni?
Yes.
No way.
Yes, we have this recipe on the site for a blender Negroni, which is pretty much like a slushy.
Now that's an acquired taste. Campari is maybe 30 years ago, a lot of people had it, but it's an acquired taste.
Yeah, I think bitterness in general as a flavor profile is an acquired taste. But if you're into it, then there are so many really good things that you can eat and drink. And I think the Negroni is like the poster child of the bitter drink.
So for those who have never had one, a Negroni is
Campari. Gin, usually a twist of an orange peel and bitters.
Right. And what else can you do? Because I bought a bottle of Campari a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And I made some Negronis.
Yeah.
And then I started drinking it straight.
Ooh.
Much to the just disgust of my wife.
Yeah.
What else can you mix with Campari?
I like a Campari soda, which is just with
clubs. That's a standard Italian drink.
Yeah, just the club soda. Also, you can use Campari to make a simple syrup. So you can do Campari with a little bit of water and sugar, and you cook it down until the sugar evaporates, and then you can use that to like pour over vanilla ice cream.
So the you still get some of the bitterness, but there's some sweetness to it.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And without jinxing it, I think we have Joanne in Queensbury with a follow-up to her not scorching popcorn question.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. My question is, I like popcorn. I put olive oil in the pan, and then I put the popcorn and pop it on top of the stove. But my pan has gotten all, burned.
It's scorched.
How do I clean that up,
please? You want to clean your pan. Okay.
I do.
Let me tell you, this is my favorite product of all time. It's called Barkeeper's Friend.
And what is it?
Barkeeper's Friend. Or it might be Barkeep's Friend. One version of that.
Barkeep.
Yes. And it comes in a golden canister. And what you want to do is mix it up with a little bit of water to make a paste. And it will, I'm telling you, it will get rid of that.
Really?
Yes.
I have two pans that I've done this to. So, I really would like to salvage them.
I think you can do it. I would give the Barkeep's Friend a try. And just make sure that you're working with a paste and don't get it too liquidy, because you need to let it sit on there and kind of dissolve some of those scorched deposits, and it will probably get 70% to 90% of it off.
Wow. Joanne, thanks for the call. I remember Deanna Fox has some methods for reclaiming some of these things. So she's another one we can talk to about that. Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. Well, Halle Bay Ramdeen is 3 for 3. And I don't think that this perfect record can continue. On a Food Friday, we'll be back and find out.
Support for WAMC comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Hudson Farmers Market, 6th and Columbia Street, Hudson, providing products and seasonal produce from more than 30 growers and producers. Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., now through November. HudsonFarmerMarketNY.com. And Empire State Youth Orchestras, presenting Music Without Borders, a celebration and concert featuring the debut of Chime, a musical program dedicated to underprivileged youth. Tomorrow, the Palace Theater, ESYO.org.
Fox Pop, it's Food Friday. It's almost like a game show today. Halle Bay Ramdeen is here from thekitchen.com. That's kitchen without the E.com, thekitchen.com. And she is the food editor over there. And so far, she is 3 for 3 with the Stump the Band section of our program. You've done very well. Are you nervous?
Not really.
Okay, because we're moving up now. The prizes
get bigger.
I might
get a little nervous.
All right, here we go. Line 2 on this Food Friday, 800-348-2551. Linda and Amherst. Linda, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to know if you know how to make a muffin not so dense and heavy and cakey, but to make it a little lighter. There's a man in town, Henyon's Bakery, that makes these muffins that are so perfect. It's not too cakey. It's not too dry. And I just wondered if you know the secret of that.
Okay, so I'm not a huge baker, but muffins are the only thing that I bake, so I might be able to shed some light here.
Oh, good.
So the key to a really good muffin is to not overmix. So you mix all of your wet ingredients in one bowl. I like to do it in a 2-cup measure. Then you mix all of your dry ingredients in another bowl. And then you add the wet to the dry and stir just enough till everything is incorporated, and you want to see streaks of the dry ingredients before you transfer the batter to the pan. So you don't want it fully mixed.
Oh, okay. I'll try that. That could do it. I'm sure I whipped the bejesus out of it.
Less is more.
Thank you for that term, Linda. We appreciate it very much. Well, thank you, and good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. All right, I'm giving you that one. 4 for 4. So did you learn, in other words, when you get a gastronomy degree,
yeah,
there's a lot that goes into that.
There is, yeah.
But how much of that is actual culinary skills? Not that much, right?
Well, I mean, it's elective. So I ended up doing like a parallel program where I went to culinary school while
I
was there. Yeah, I did.
Okay, because I know your mom's probably brilliant, but you couldn't have learned all of this from mom.
You know what? And I bet my parents are listening right now, but both of my parents are amazing, really curious eaters.
Yeah.
But they have maybe about five things that they're really good at cooking.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
You go through life
and
with
so,
five.
Yeah, you get your signatures.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I have like learned my own cooking skills. Get good at five things.
How much time do you spend cooking? You're pretty busy most of the time.
Yeah, you know what? I'm a fast cook. I like 30 minutes in the kitchen for dinner and that's
really?
About it. Yeah.
Well, if you're efficient and you plan ahead, that can be
exactly
very well spent. Let's go back to the lines at 800-348-2551. Hallie Bay Ramdeen is our guest. Over to line three and Rose and Troy.
Hi. I would like to know how to make Spanish beans.
Okay. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about Spanish beans? Like what flavors are you...
I would get the can, the Goya can.
All right, so is it more like refried beans or...
No. And I would add some green peppers to it and maybe onions and a little bit of the tomato sauce. Some people use tomato paste, which is thicker.
Do you know what kind of beans they are? Are they like a lighter bean?
They're
like a
pinto? Pink beans.
Okay. Okay. So I'm thinking that's probably like a pinto bean.
Yeah, like that.
A lot of the flavors that you brought up will work there. I can't say that I specifically know what Spanish beans are, but the flavors that you're talking about, green pepper, tomatoes, tomato paste is going to give you the deepest tomatoy flavor. Often people talk about that umami flavor. It's super savory, almost like a sixth sense or a sixth flavor profile. I would add garlic there. I would saute everything in a little bit of olive oil, add the garlic, and add a little bit of cumin, which is something that you see traces of in Spanish cuisine, and it can really add that like spicy warmth. And if you feel like your Spanish beans are missing something, I would start with those two ingredients, garlic and cumin.
Yeah. I put a cilantro in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then after I take out the leaf, but I personally would eat the leaf itself, you know, after it's done.
Some people like cilantro.
I know, it's a polarizing ingredient, but to me, cilantro, you know, you add it at the very end, like a big fresh hit of cilantro.
Okay. And some onion. I throw in like sometimes a small little whole onion also.
Sounds like you have a good plan already, Rose.
I know.
So
send us your recipe.
Need anything else, right?
Yeah, well, that sounds good.
No, it sounds like you're doing pretty good all by yourself.
Okay. Thank you so very much. I love the program is the best.
Well, thank you so much for calling. Have a great weekend. All right, Hallie, I'm going to give you that one.
All right.
You thought on your feet. You didn't have a chance to research that. You didn't quite know what she was driving at. I'm giving you that.
All right.
Let's go to Alan on the thruway. Alan, you're on.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got friends coming over Tuesday night and want to cook steak for them on a charcoal grill.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife said we have to have vegetables as well. So what would pair well? We're going to do a baked potato with sour cream, and I'll probably put minced garlic and chives with the sour cream.
That sounds good.
But cooking the steak and what other vegetable would pair well?
So veggies that are going to go well with that, I would go classic. I think grilled asparagus, delicious.
Do it right on the grill.
Oh, yeah. Grilled zucchini.
Oh, yes.
Do the zucchini, cut them into nice thick slabs so they don't burn too quickly, and marinated portobello mushroom caps. And then let me ask you, what cut of meat did you get for the steak?
I haven't got it yet.
Okay.
I will go to the butcher and probably get a, I'm not sure. What would you suggest? You're the expert.
Yeah.
I'm just a novice.
I would suggest a flank steak, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I would.
A what?
A flank steak.
We'll have to have this discussion after Alan is off, but keep answering the question.
I would.
I disagree.
I would. So this is what I would do. You get the flank steak. You season it very, very liberally with salt and pepper, and you create two zones on your grill. You do a really hot zone, and then you do a low zone. And
that's
so
tough with charcoal, though.
No, you can do it. You got to just build the charcoal into two different zones. So, you know, and you have to, and I'm sure you know this part. Let's get back to the steak. So with the steak, you want to salt it, let it stand, get it to room temperature before you even throw it on the grill, and then sear it on the hot part of the grill, both mm-hmm. sides, and then get the char that you want, get those grill marks that you want, and then move it over to the part of the grill that has the indirect heat, and then cook mm-hmm. it to the temperature that you want. If you want to do rare, you're going to do about 120 degrees.
Right.
Hey, good luck with that, Alan.
That sounds good.
You know, I would almost go with a simple toss salad. With that?
Yeah.
I like that with the steak.
Yeah, that's good. I just feel like, for me, when I am grilling something, I want to get as much out of it as possible. So I always grill vegetables, and then I use them over the course of the week, and then I have that smoky kind of grilled flavor in whatever I'm cooking.
Do you charcoal grill?
I do. It's my favorite.
Me too.
I love it.
So one thing that we like to do is we buy some of those wood chips.
Yes.
And soak them.
Yes.
And then smoke.
Yeah.
Do a lot of smoking.
I love that.
We like London broil, though. So I'll usually get a London broil thick one,
mm-hmm.
marinated for about 36 hours.
Oh, wow.
And then sear on both sides and then put it up on the top shelf of the. We have a charcoal grill too.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of like
just
slow and smoke,
it.
Yeah.
Smoke it.
That's good when you have, you know, like a lot of time and you like tending. But I think for like a quick dinner where you want everything to be finished at the same time, a thinner cut like flank steak.
Well, maybe we'll try that just for grins and giggles. Number to call here is 800-348-2551. Food Friday. Food editor Hallie Bay Ramdeen is our guest. Let's go to Amelie in Sheffield, Mass.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have bought a bunch of dry rubs in my visits down to Memphis and Mississippi, and they're just sitting in my cabinet. Mm-hmm. They're probably going on a year old, and I just haven't used them because I don't have a smoker. And I really want to make dry rub, like Memphis-style ribs. But I have understood that I need a smoker for that, but all I have is a Weber grill. So I know you kind of just spoke about smoking in your last question that you answered. So any advice on what I can do with these rubs?
Yeah.
So
the nice thing about those rubs is that they're going to pair well with smoke as a flavor element. But you don't necessarily need to get that smoky flavor from an actual smoker or from a grill. You can use ingredients that have those similar flavors. So you can pair them with things like a chipotle pepper, which is a smoked jalapeno pepper, or use smoked sea salt or smoked olive oil. And that, you know, coupled with those spice rubs will get you to that smoked flavor that you love. And then secondly... with the ribs and even like a pulled pork, that sort of thing, you can totally do that in your oven or even your slow cooker. And we have a ton of recipes on the site where, I mean, you're not technically smoking it, but you're going to get that tender pull-apart texture. And we have a ton of recipes on the site that will walk you through how to do that step by step.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
One way that we have simulated pulled pork in the dead of winter is in the slow cooker.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's just incredible.
Transformative, right?
And you can put beef in there and it'll pull apart.
I love the slow cooker.
So delicious.
I blame that on my time in Iowa, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How much time did you spend in Iowa?
I was there for 3 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you came back to the big city here, huh?
With a slow cooker.
you see? We've done whole shows on that. Let's go to Emelie in Plainfield, Mass. Emelie, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I sort of modified an apple crisp recipe and made an excellent strawberry rhubarb crisp last week. But I have rhubarb in my garden now, and I had bought the strawberries, and I will have strawberries more like the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if I could freeze some rhubarb. And what I did was I mixed tapioca with maple syrup, and I was wondering, could I cook or par cook some rhubarb in that and then freeze that and then put the strawberries with that and make the dish when I have strawberries? How would I freeze some fresh rhubarb?
Well, is that a part of the filling for your crumble when you mix it with the tapioca and the maple?
Yeah. I used a little flour right on the fruit, and then I mixed tapioca and maple, and that was what made it, you know, thicker.
Okay, gotcha. So I would freeze the rhubarb on its own. So I would cut it into the pieces that I wanted it, the size, whatever I wanted it. And then you freeze it in a single layer on a sheet tray.
And, raw?
Yeah, raw. And then, yep, you freeze it in a single layer on the sheet tray. And then maybe after 30 minutes or an hour, it really doesn't need more than that, you transfer it to like a Ziploc bag, and then that way it freezes into little pieces and you don't have to worry about it like freezing into a giant block.
And then
when it comes time to cook with it to make that crumble, all you have to do is let it thaw out in the fridge or even on the countertop and then go about the recipe like you normally would.
Would you, sometimes when I've frozen zucchini raw to make a zucchini bread, I then have to drain it when I bake with it?
Yeah.
Do I have to do that?
No, zucchini is just, it's super high in water, so it's going to behave a little bit differently. But with, you know, rhubarb loves to be frozen. And even in the middle of the winter, if you want rhubarb, I would totally tell you to go look for the frozen rhubarb because it's great. It's frozen when it's fresh and in season.
I didn't realize you could freeze it raw. I thought you had to cook it.
No.
That makes it so much easier.
Yeah. You can totally do that.
I will try that. Thank you so much.
Emily, thanks for the call. All right, Hallie, I think you're 8 for 8. Okay, so you're doing really well. I'm waiting for the one that will stump you.
I am waiting too. Now
Jackie,
I'm getting nervous.
Jackie in Greenfield, who is not on the line, left this question. Alternative to Beano, please suggest.
Oh, man. I actually have an answer for this.
Ah.
It's anything that's like high in probiotics. So I would totally have her look into adding sauerkraut to her meal.
Sauerkraut?
Yeah.
Will have the reverse effect from what I think sauerkraut usually does?
No, it's all about like populating. I mean, this is not my area of expertise, but I have found that when you have like a solid number of probiotic foods in your diet, it really just helps with digestion in general.
Why would you need an alternative to Beano?
I mean, Beano is just like preventing a certain enzyme from reacting
right.
to cause what you're trying to prevent.
Right. And you're very diplomatic about the way you're putting it, too.
Yeah.
You've got this radio thing down. Our number to call is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Hallie Bay Ramdeen, who is the food editor over at thekitchen.com. And if you have a question, 800-348-2551. So you answer all these questions.
Yeah.
And the one that leapt out at me was, I have fish bones in my throat.
Yes.
Now what? So what do you do?
Okay, so this is all based on something that happened in my family. My younger brother had a fishbone in his throat once and really thought he was like on the brink of death.
Yeah.
And so we went and found out what to do, and it's a very delicious solution.
What?
You can have a really thick milkshake or a peanut butter sandwich.
Really?
Yeah.
So the peanut butter, that's counterintuitive.
Yeah, so you have to, you kind of have to get something that will help move it down.
Right.
And so something thick, like a malted milkshake from like Stewart's.
Delicious.
or just like a peanut butter sandwich made kind of with like the softest bread and the thickest peanut
maybe
butter.
Maybe some fluff on that?
If you go that way, yes.
Okay, fair enough. So you were in Iowa for 3 years.
Yeah.
What cooking things did you learn there that you wouldn't ordinarily learn around here?
So I went to Iowa and probably hadn't eaten that much like pork or anything or that much pork or pulled pork. And then I came back and I was like, well, this is, you know, one of my favorite foods now because it's the pork capital of the country.
And so what do you do that I wouldn't necessarily do, that I wouldn't know what to do with cooking delicious grilled or barbecued pork?
You know, I would say brine everything.
That's a great tip. And we've been finding that at home, too.
Yeah, brine everything. Even on a weeknight, like a 20-minute brine to an overnight brine is going to make whatever meat you're cooking better.
I mean, you think about brining poultry, that goes back.
Yeah, right.
But
turkey, Thanksgiving.
But pork, but not beef, though, right?
Yeah, you could do it. You can do it. The key with brining is to not over-brine because salt works to basically denature the proteins, unravel the proteins. It's almost like cooking. And so if you let a brine go for too long, you're going to get mushy meat.
So how, in other words, we have, for Thanksgiving,
right.
we have brined a turkey overnight 18 hours and then rinsed it and it was fabulous.
Yes.
It was the best ever.
Yeah.
But that's too long for, say, pork?
No, it just depends on the cut of meat. So like if it's a naturally tender cut of meat, it doesn't need as long as something that's a little bit tougher. So, but like for a pork butt or a pork shoulder, longer is great. Pork chops, you know, a 30-minute brine before you throw them on the grill or into a skillet will make a huge difference.
This is good advice. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Gina in Saratoga. Gina, you're on with Hallie Bay Ramdeen.
Hi. Thanks. I have a quick comment and a question. My comment is that I really love tri-tip on the grill.
Yum,
because
me too.
It's affordable and it's really and it cooks up quick and it's always tender.
I agree. I love a tri-tip.
Yeah, so the question was this. We were raised by two Southern grandmothers, and they cooked the best food in the world. Mm-hmm. We'll never taste the like of it again, I don't think. But my one grandmother made coleslaw, and basically she used sugar, a little bit of sugar. She used mayonnaise, and she had her brand, you know, mm-hmm. and she used vinegar. And I've been trying to make it ever since, you know, I can remember eating it. Never quite gotten it right, and I've read recipes online, and I can't seem to find anything that replicates what she did. Any ideas?
What do you feel like's missing when you taste it?
Well, you know what? It could be the combination, because a lot of times I try not to make it sweet, mm-hmm. and then when I realize it's not sweet, I make it overly sweet.
Right.
So it could be the ratio, maybe, that I'm doing wrong.
That, and you know what? I wonder about the mayo. So
okay.
The most popular mayo in the South right now is Duke's, right? Duke's mayo.
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely
far sweeter than Hellman's.
Huh.
Oh,
never heard of Duke's.
Yeah, Duke's mayo. And so
yeah.
I'm wondering if she used Duke's, and
okay.
I'm also wondering if she might have used Miracle Whip, which is...
You know what? She did use Miracle Whip sometimes, but I remember her using Duke's as well. So...
I would try it with the Duke's and play
okay.
around with the ratios, but mm-hmm. I don't think that you have the ingredients per se wrong. I just think it might be the brands that you have to play around with.
Interesting.
That would make a lot of difference. You're probably right, and it never occurred to me. Listen, thanks so much.
Hey, Gina, thank you very much. Miracle Whip's an interesting thing. My grandmother used to use it.
Yeah.
And it never knew quite how it differed, but it did taste.
It's
it had a different twang to it.
Yeah, it's sweet and far more vinegary.
Yeah. All right. And did you ever make a mayonnaise chocolate cake?
Have I made that? I think I've eaten it. Like I said, I'm not a big baker, but... I'm sure I've eaten
My
it.
Grandmother used to make that.
I know, they're good.
We would laughingly call it the Goodyear rubber chocolate cake, but it was very tasty.
Yeah,
all right, let's take a break. We are joined today by Halle Bay Ramdean. It is Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. So far, she's batting 1,000, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Field Goods, working with Hudson Valley farmers to deliver weekly subscriptions of local produce year-round to workplaces and community locations, supports small farms and healthy eating, field-goods.com. Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grant Street in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, buttercrunch, and sea-salted caramels, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville, UncleSamsCandy.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more, Harold's.com.
Vox Pop Food Friday. Lovely time here with Halle Bay Ramdean. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go for the home stretch. Well, that's not helpful, Brian in Schuylerville. He hung up. Let's go over to Fred in Hurley. Fred, are you going to hang up on us?
No. I have two questions. First, regarding the brining.
Yeah.
It's probably no nonsense that you could probably save the brine and use it to cook beans or a stew or something like that.
No.
I don't know. She's shaking her head.
No. You do not want to use that brine again after you've had raw meat in it.
You don't want to drink it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're cooking it, won't it?
You mean to brine something else in it?
No. To reuse it in a stew or to make beans or something like that?
No, I would not. I mean, once you have raw meat in that brine, you don't want to use it for anything else.
But if
else.
You're cooking it in a stew, theoretically okay, yeah?
I wouldn't do that. I just feel like the possibility of contamination is just too high.
Okay.
For salt.
Okay.
Water.
Second question, having to do with vinegar and say red meats particularly,
mm-hmm.
Is vinegar
Will it tenderize?
Relatively important in the body being able to process the red meat?
Oh, you know what? I can't really speak to, like, how the body is actually going to, you know, that's just not my area.
That's the first one that she couldn't answer.
I don't want to tell you something about.
I thought you were, one of these, you know, you studied this stuff. Okay, never mind. I'm picking.
Well, you know, like, that definitely veers into, you know, nutrition and how your body is actually working with food. Yeah, well, gastronomy is more about food
and
culture.
This is like chemistry.
Right.
Biology.
Exactly.
And,
but I
well,
will tell
Fred,
you that,
that was okay.
At the very end, red meat and balsamic vinegar do very nicely together from a flavor standpoint. So I would not hesitate to use it as a glaze for whatever red meat I was cooking.
All right.
Fred, thanks a lot. Well,
Thank you.
You finally got her. Amazing. So she got through 43 minutes of the program without being stumped, and I knew you could do it. It's Marguerite in Pittsfield. Your turn.
Hi, yes. I'm referring back to the lady with the rhubarb. I found a way to extend my rhubarb season so that it matches with the strawberry season. And the way to do that with your rhubarb plant, the minute the flower blossom starts to appear, you cut it right off, cut all the flower blossoms off of the rhubarb plant, and that plant will keep trying and trying and trying to make the flower to make the seeds for next year. And if you keep frustrating it, you'll extend your season right up into July.
I love that. That's what strawberries will make us do. We'll suppress a rhubarb plant. It's a great tip.
Thank you, Marguerite. We appreciate it.
I know.
Have a good weekend. Let's go to Anne Marie. Anne Marie, you're on.
Hi. Great show as always. Quick question. You mentioned that sauerkraut has probiotic benefits. Can you name some other things that have that benefit as well?
Yeah, sure. Kimchi is another big one. Very spicy, very flavorful. Kefir, which is a fermented yogurt drink, has a sizable amount of probiotics in it. And kombucha, which is pretty popular these days. It's a fermented tea beverage.
Delicious.
That's, yeah, extremely high in probiotics.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Apparently a lot of people with gas problems here
calling. Sounds like it.
It's quite amazing. Let's go to Patty in High Falls. Patty, you're on.
Hi. Thanks.
Sure.
I have a question about when you're cooking chicken. Mm-hmm. I love to use a pressure cooker because it's very efficient.
Yes.
And there's always liquid with a lot of fat in it in the bottom of the pot afterwards. I live in the country, so we have bears.
Mm-hmm.
I have compost. I never put meat or fat in. And I have a dog, so I don't want to bury it.
Right.
So, and I don't want to pour it down the sink drain.
Right.
So what do people do?
Oh, my gosh, that's such good liquid. Don't do any of those things. Use it. So I would use that to braise greens, especially like sturdier greens like chard or kale. So you saute your greens. You kind of cook them down until they deepen in color, and then you splash the pan with the leftover chicken fatty juice, and you'll get amazing flavor. You can also use it to cook your rice or your beans.
With all the fat in it.
Oh, yeah. You'll get such a good flavor. I would probably say that chicken fat is superior to bacon fat. So.
Ooh, that's heresy.
Superior to what fat?
Bacon fat.
Oh.
So I would
okay.
use it for
well,
one of those.
I just didn't know what to do with it because I don't want to clog up the drain.
That's a good point.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Patty, have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. Pretty partial to the bacon fat.
It's good, but then you have the chicken fat, and it's like,
okay.
It's really good,
We might
too.
Have to do a fat roundtable. We'll get Deanna Fox on here, because I know she has rather strong opinions on this. Bill in Niskayuna. Bill.
Oh, hi, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, one quick comment on the bacon grease down the drain. Just run the hot water down the drain for a while first and then put the grease in there. My question is about rhubarb pie. My wife was making one the other night, and she misread 1 1/3 cups of sugar as 1/3 cup of sugar.
And
after she was finished with it, we didn't really like it, and she was kind of wondering if there was anything she could have done to save it once it was already in the oven.
That's
and
a great question.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Was it a double-layer pie? Was there a crust on the top?
Yes, there was. And I was thinking maybe you could inject syrup into it or something, but she didn't want to try.
Honestly, at that point, you're better off serving it with something sweet like on top cream. Of it. Yeah, I mean, you could do like a caramel sauce to really up the sweetness. You could do an ice cream, but you can't change the sweetness of the pie after it's been baked.
So you could not. I mean, I think that's a pretty ingenious idea from your wife, Bill, to inject some sort of simple syrup into the pie. You couldn't do that?
I would be worried that it would make the crust really sticky and soft. Yeah. At that point, you might as well just make like a drizzle of something, like a caramel drizzle, or just serve it with your favorite ice cream.
All right. Well, we elected to toss it, but thanks very much for your idea.
Thanks a lot, Bill. We appreciate the call. Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551. Halle Bay Ramdeen is our guest. The website is The Kitchen, without the E, thekitchen.com. You have your own website, too, right?
Yeah, I have a few.
You have a few. I know you have a blog.
Yeah. Yeah, so I write about a few things on the side. I write about food and art history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to keep that love alive. And I write personal essays just on food and culture.
Yeah, and the one about, was it Jamaica? Your trip to Jamaica? Very nice piece of writing. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Brian in Albany. Brian.
Yes.
You're on.
We bought a higher-end flat-top, glass-top cook stove. And the burners are too high. It's German, and it's the burners, even on low, are too high to simmer. What would you recommend?
Probably a heavier bottomed pot.
Well, our pots are pretty thick, you know, 3/4 inch, 1/2 inch, whatever. We have better cookware, and it's still too hot. Everything boils in there, and if you're not watching it, like spaghetti sauce or gravies, it will boil and burn.
You can't turn the stove down?
Yeah, that would be.
I can't turn it down anymore. It's on number one.
It's a gas stove?
No, electric glass top.
Yeah, I think between the thicker stove, the thicker pots. I'm not quite sure what you could do. I would probably see if you can do something to calibrate the actual stove.
Well, I know when we looked at the stove, I noticed on there each one of the settings. There's 2 8-inch, a 10-inch that has 3 on there, and then a smaller one in the back. Even the smaller one in the back doesn't boil as much, but it's a rolling simmer, even on number one.
Hmm.
Can I do one of those flat burner covers like you do on a gas stove?
I wonder.
I didn't know if that would work, be too hot on a glass top.
I would honestly, I think your best bet at this point is to contact the manufacturer and see what other people who've had similar problems do.
Lower the voltage somehow, yeah?
Yeah, they're going to have the best answer to that.
Because it is computerized. We had it for 3 weeks just before Christmas, and the main computer blew in it, and they couldn't fix it until after Christmas.
So maybe you're sending the thing too much voltage, and you're frying it. You're frying the computer, and maybe it's getting too much AC.
Okay.
I don't know. Listen, I'm just throwing it out there. Thanks a lot for the call. Good luck. You get all kinds of calls on this program, right?
Yeah, best of luck.
You're really rolling with the punches very well. All right, let's go to Pat in Adams, Mass. Pat, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know what the recipe is for brining pork chops. I've never tried brining anything before.
Well, so the place to start probably is 1 tablespoon of kosher salt. So that's going to have a much larger grain of salt. I would do like 2 to 3 cups of water. And then you can add in other secondary flavors. You can add in bay leaves, peppercorn, kind of depending on the direction that you're going. And then you're going to stir that up until the salt dissolves. Add your pork chops so they're fully covered and let them brine anywhere from 20 minutes to overnight. And then pat them dry right before you begin to cook.
Very good.
And you can definitely find a recipe for brining on the site. So if you go to thekitchen.com and search brining, you'll find lots of ideas.
It's thekitchen.com?
Yep, and that's no E in kitchen.
So you get it? K-I-T-C-H-N.
Okay. Got it.
All right. Pat, thanks a lot for the call. This one came in via email from Alan, who's not our Alan, but a different Alan. Your recipe for gumbo yaya, chicken sausage gumbo.
Do I have one?
I don't know. It just says your recipe for gumbo yaya.
Well, I will say that the key to a good gumbo is the perfect roux. And the best advice that I've ever gotten about roux was that it should be the color of the bayou after the first storm.
Oh, I like it.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Very poetic. But basically, that just means, you know, you can have a roux that's anywhere between like a blonde roux, which is kind of like mellow and caramel colored, to a very, very deep roux that's dark brown. And that will lend the level of kind of depth of flavor to the roux. So you kind of have to go into a gumbo knowing what you want out of it.
Rick Orlando was on a couple months ago, and he brought a gumbo that had gator in it.
Yeah.
It was really, really amazing.
Did it taste like chicken?
You know, that was my joke, too, because I never had gator. But, yeah, it sort of did. No, it was great. Let's go over to, is it Nancy in Amsterdam? Nancy, you're on.
Hi. Well, actually, my question was about the recipe for a brine. And I know you just gave one for pork. However, I missed the amount of salt that you put in. But I wondered, is it different, and would the ancillary ingredients be different if you were doing a poultry? Because I don't eat much pork or beef.
Yeah, so that's the recipe for a standard brine, the 1 tablespoon of kosher salt to about 2 to 3 cups of water. And you can flavor it however you want after that for poultry or for pork. I will say this, though, that the key to a brine, it's the salt, and that's what's really doing the work there. It's literally pre-cooking your meat in some way by denaturing the proteins. And so any of the flavors that you're getting from the secondary ingredients aren't going to permeate the way that the salt will, but your meat will taste better.
What salt would you use for that?
Kosher salt.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the lady that was throwing away the water and the fat from the slow cooker,
mm-hmm.
that's basically a chicken stock that she made, right?
Totally, yeah. You can use that. That's...
Yeah, so it must be awesome.
Exactly. Definitely worth cooking with.
And those people that were putting sugar in their rhubarb, I think that first lady had it right. When you mix this rhubarb with strawberries, and I like to mix in apples of almost whatever variety you like
mm-hmm.
in my crisp, and then I don't use any sugar other than maybe a little in the crumb topping because I'm gluten-free, so I use oatmeal and maybe a little brown sugar and a little butter, and you don't have to sweeten that at all. The sugar from the strawberries and the apples is just excellent.
That sounds delicious.
You really taste it. Instead of tasting all that sugar, you really taste the fruit.
All right. Nancy, thanks for the call. This one came in via email. Hallie from Jeremy. For animal fats that solidify at room temperature, can you pour them into empty cans, let them cool, and throw them away if you don't want to reuse them?
Absolutely. That's my number one tip on how to do that.
All right. Let's go over to Jenna in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. How's Portsmouth doing, Jenna?
It's a gorgeous day, but I called to congratulate Haley on her winning streak because the one question she didn't get was not within her sphere of expertise.
Well, you see?
So,
thank you.
You're keeping good score.
Great advice. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see you this summer. We head up to York and we go right through Portsmouth every time.
Oh, wonderful. Enjoy your trip.
Thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it. Let's go quickly over to Gene in Richmond, Mass. Gene.
Yes. You mentioned about your coleslaw salad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gene, can you turn your radio down, sir? Because I'm hearing myself, and I do sound great, but we really shouldn't do that.
Okay, for your coleslaw?
Yeah, for the coleslaw.
Okay. The best thing to add flavor to it is horseradish.
Ooh.
You just add a little bit at a time till you get it to taste the way you want.
Are you using fresh or are you using prepared?
Sorry?
Are you using fresh horseradish or?
Or prepared horseradish.
Prepared. That's one I use prepared. Or you could use the other, either one.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
That's a great tip.
Good
but
tip.
But it really brings out the flavor and it's delicious. And when I go to a restaurant, I usually bring a little bit with me.
Oh, good for you, Gene.
I love it.
Thanks for the call. Great weekend, okay?
You too.
Now let's quickly go over to Marjorie in Saugerties. Marjorie, you got about 30 seconds.
Okay, I just want to make a suggestion about rhubarb, complementary fruits with rhubarb.
Okay.
I don't like strawberries, but I use peaches and nectarines. I just harvested some rhubarb this morning, and I just bought raspberries and apricots.
Ooh.
And you don't need to put in very much sugar after that kind of fruit at all.
That sounds good.
So, people might want to try something new with their rhubarb.
Well, thanks a lot, Marjorie. Have a great weekend.
You too, Ray.
Hey, don't forget the lockbox is open at WAMC.org if you want to make a pledge. We are attempting to raise $400,000 before the fund drive begins on Monday, June 6th. You can make a secure online pledge. We have things that you can get at certain pledge levels, but It's not what it's about. Hopefully we will get your support, keep quality programming like Halle Bayramdi going. Hey, did you have fun?
I did. This is great.
You did really, really well. And the website, once again, is?
Yeah, thekitchen.com, no E in kitchen.
All right. And so what I suggest you do, if you didn't get your question in, write it in. And if it's something about fish bones in your throat or anything, make it wild. And you know what? The guy with the problem with the stove, email it in, and then you'll research it and find out. Right?
That's what I do. I will try to find an answer for you.
Well, thanks to everybody who called. Support comes from Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings indoor or out at the Curtis House with three rooms available or at a variety of venues around the area, gloriosaco.com. Blue Heron Restaurant & Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts, blueherondining.com/catering. Kimlin Propane, installing and providing propane services for homes and businesses throughout Ulster, Orange, and Sullivan counties. KimlinPropane.com. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com. Thanks again to Halle Bayramdi for being with us today. Thanks to Zach Bay Malloy at the controls. Well done. Paulette Ryder answered the calls. Jessica Blaustein Marshall is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Alan will be in the big chair on Monday at this time for a medical Monday. Stand by for news.